On this week's edition of New York Now, Election Day has come and gone, and we've got a lot to unpack. First, Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio and Bill Mahoney from Politico New York join me to break down what happened at the polls. And later, political insiders Steve Greenberg and Bob Bellafiore join me in studio with analysis. Plus, we'll show you what was on voters' minds at the polls on Tuesday. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation
law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Yet another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. Election Day has come and gone, but this year's elections in New York aren't over just yet. We have the results from Election Day and early voting, but there are still thousands of absentee ballots that won't be counted until next week. We already know the winners in some of the races in New York, but not all of them. And we don't really know how much of a difference those absentee ballots will make when all of this is said and done. So let's discuss all of that. With me in studio are Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio and Bill Mahoney from Politico New York. Thank you both for being here.
Great to be here.
So this is kind of a strange situation we find ourselves in on Election Day because everybody was expecting such a strong blue wave in New York, especially with the state Senate, with Congress. I think we saw really handily with in-person voting, meaning early voting and day of voting, that Republicans really had the edge. And Billy, I want to go to you first, because what it's going to come down to in a lot of these races is the absentee ballots that are left. So right now, Democrats have 40 seats in the state Senate, meaning they're 2 seats away from a supermajority. Republicans have 23. Based on the numbers, where does it look like we're going to end up at the end of this?
Probably somewhere pretty close to where we are right now with the 40 seats. As of now, my math, there's about 37 seats that we can say are almost certainly going to go towards the Democrats. And there's another 6 seats that seem like they're truly undecided. A few others that I include in the 37 or that I'm not including in the 6, like they're, if there are mathematical miracles, maybe they could go one way or the other that I'm not including in that way. But we're looking at somewhere between 37 and 43, basically. Those other 6, they seem like they're true toss-ups. It'll be decided in the coming weeks as we slowly, very slowly, count our absentee ballots now, sometime between now and Thanksgiving, maybe when the Electoral College meets in mid-December. But we have a lot of seats that are very undetermined right now. We've never had an election like this with this many absentees, and we'll have to see how they shake out.
Yeah. This is so crazy to me.
Because I guess it needs to be called Election Month, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because this is Election Week, Election Month.
For a month. But when we were sitting here, I have to admit, last week, you and I were, Dan and we were saying, well, the Democrats very likely could get a supermajority. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I think many people thought, and certainly the Democrats thought, there was going to be a blue wave.
I was
anti-Trump,
sure.
And they were going to ride it. And that's all they had to do. And it turns out they needed to do more than that. And frankly, it's easy to do Monday morning quarterbacking. Frankly, they didn't do that. They didn't do a lot this year. They passed a lot of things last year, some of them controversial, like bail reform and other criminal justice changes that kind of came back to bite them this year. And they let Governor Cuomo have a lot of power over the pandemic. And I think they just weren't really seen as leaders, you know, leading, trying to help New Yorkers out of the pandemic. I think that belatedly they realized that they needed to do more.
I think you're exactly right. I think Democrats, especially in New York State, I think they got really cocky this year. Mm-hmm. I think they were expecting to ride the coattails of Joe Biden. And I think that they felt a little bit of a rise from Governor Andrew Cuomo's response to the coronavirus. Obviously, that didn't really work out. I mean, we'll have to see where the absentee ballots take us. But Bill, where were the Democrats most vulnerable? And are we seeing that the election results reflect that?
Well, the way that this is kind of shaking out based on what we've seen so far, and again, there's a lot that's undecided, but it seems pretty feasible that the Democrats are going to lose a few seats in New York City's suburbs on Long Island and the Hudson Valley, where they made their biggest gains just a couple years ago. That's where the Republicans, who say that they won partially because of their message attacking the Democrats for things like bail reform, criminal justice, some of the defund the police messaging, that's where those types of things seem to resonate. And if those races do wind up going the Republican way, it would lend some credence to the Republican argument that this really helped them out in the past couple months. But it does seem on the other side like Democrats are almost certainly going to pick up 3, maybe 4 seats upstate.
Right, yeah. We should mention those. Right, go ahead.
I'm referring to this. We've had the past couple of years, the Long Island Six, which has kind of played this outsized role in the Senate, where when they're negotiating things like marijuana legalization or taxation, they've kind of had a veto power over how far to the left the New York City Democrats and other members could go. Mm-hmm. There's a pretty good chance they're going to be replaced with the Rust Belt Six next year, where we've had basically for a long stretch, Tim Kennedy out in Buffalo. For a long stretch of his decade in office, he's needed to drive all the way out to Albany 4 hours to find the nearest fellow member. Rachel May joined him 2 years ago, and he's got quite a few people in Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse who are poised to join him this time around. The Democrats basically came pretty close to running the tables in those those parts of the state.
That's right, the former Rich Funky seat and Joe Roebuck seat, strong Republican.
Chris Jacobs seat in Buffalo.
We've
got one in Syracuse.
Retiring, and they have been probably replaced by Democrats, because as you mentioned, there's still absentee ballots out. And you know, the reasoning that a lot of the absentees were probably cast by Democrats and that they are ahead right now, those three candidates, Sean Ryan, the assemblyman, is going to take the Chris Jacobs seat, Samra Brooke, and Jeremy Cooney. I hope I'm getting his name right. We'll know their name soon if they end up coming to Albany. But that is going to make a big difference, because that was a long Republican stretch, and they're making more inroads upstate. And actually probably losing one seat in New York City, which is kind of, you know, not what everybody expected.
And I think the sixth seat that I was referring to, another one in Syracuse, kind of sums up with what a lot of the math that we're going to be looking at for the next few weeks looks like. It's a longstanding Republican seat where basically for 50, 60 years, there were two Republicans, most recently John DeFrancisco, who had it. Mm-hmm. But then Republicans won it 2 years ago. Long story short, it was an open race again. And John Mannion, who was the runner-up in 2018, ran again this year. But if you look at the numbers in his race, so he's down by 7,000 votes after the in-person votes have been tallied.
John Mannion
is the Democrat who's running the Syracuse seat. Mm-hmm. 7,000 votes, usually that's a type of margin where after Election Day we'd say, not paying attention to this one anymore, I don't care how the other votes go, because they're not going to make a difference, whatever the paper ballots are. Mm-hmm. But in this race, we've got 37,000 absentee ballots still to count. And if you look at it, there's 17,000 of them were cast by Democrats and 10,000 were cast by Republicans, which that's a 7,000 vote difference, which brings us, if we assume most of those people vote pretty much along party lines, that makes it a dead even race. It'll probably be decided by the 10,000 other people in the district who cast absentee ballots. And we're going to be looking at that throughout the state in probably six different seats in the coming weeks. And do those people tilt Republican? Do they tilt Democrat? And that'll determine in the end how big the Democratic majority is.
I think at least a couple of them will end up switching, if not more.
They've got six. It'll be tough to win all six, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a really interesting shift it is, though, to have these upstate districts go Democrat over Republican, whereas in years past, we had just a few years ago, the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, composed of more of downstate, city, Jeff Klein, Diane Savino, those types. And maybe there's an opportunity for these upstate Democrats to form a coalition, like you said, Bill, to have that kind of like veto power in some of these conversations to push back against the progressives.
I don't think they're going to form like an IDC type coalition.
I think they could
be more of an informal thing where it's They have enough numbers to make their voice heard, especially if we're not talking about 42, 43 seats, but if we're talking about more like 39, 40. The majority is going to be pretty reliant on them for most of what they do.
Right.
And they do represent a more moderate group of constituents than, you know, some of the New York City really progressive, really liberal members. So I think there could be some tensions with the Senate and, you know, how they're going to go forward with policy.
For the most part, but I think there are some issues where upstaters might be more open to progressive priorities than the Long Island members were. If you look at the millionaire's tax, for example.
I was talking about New York City, you're right. Long Island is still the most probably conservative type of Democrat you're going to find.
It's true, but if the millionaire's tax, if you're talking to somebody from Buffalo or Rochester, there's not a whole lot of billionaires in their district who are too concerned about
some of these
taxes that are being floated. Compared to some of the members from Long Island, Westchester, that was a legitimate concern that these wealth taxes would hurt their constituents quite a bit in many cases.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
For these upstate members, certainly they need state money. They don't have a lot of millionaires to protect. Mm-hmm. And it's a type of thing that I think the odds increase quite a bit if they have a bigger role in the conference.
I did want to talk about Congress, but I want to replace it because we only have a minute and a half left.
Okay.
What issues do you both think were really top tier in these competitive races on Long Island, in the lower Hudson Valley, some of them upstate? What was in the voters' minds? Bill, I'll go to you first, and then we'll finish with Karen.
I would have to go back to criminal justice stuff, like I mentioned. Especially in Long Island, the Republicans hammered that home in every single one of these districts, saying they're the same part of the same party as people who want to defund the police. They voted for bail reform. And we don't know if these members will hold on or not, but certainly it seems to have made their life more difficult in many of these districts.
Yeah, definitely. No, I totally agree. And also the pandemic, which just generally put everybody in a bad mood this year.
Yeah. Right? You know, it's funny you mentioned criminal justice reform. We saw it so clearly in, and I have to let you guys go, but the Max Rose seat on Staten Island, Lower Brooklyn, right, in Congress, that Nicole Malliotakis, a current assembly member, really hammered against him on that issue. And that, yeah, seemed to really drive voters out to the polls to support Nicole over Max Rose.
So, yeah, but that always was kind of a split district.
It
more
was.
Traditional Republican, a lot of police officers, firefighters live in that district. And I think she was also a good candidate, too. That helped a lot.
I think so, too. Yep. She had the name recognition from, yep, the 2017 mayoral,
right,
race.
Yep.
So people knew who she was. But it's going to be really interesting to see her in Congress next year, assuming,
absolutely,
that she keeps the win. I'll let you guys go. Bill Mahoney from Politico and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio, thank you both so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
We'll have more analysis in a bit from two of the state's leading political insiders. But first, Tuesday feels like it was just a month ago. But we caught up with some voters at the polls this week to see what was on their minds as they cast their ballot. Let's see if they were thinking the same thing as you were thinking. Take a look.
New York's Capital Region is politically much like the rest of the state. Democrats typically win in the cities, but travel just a few miles and you'll hit areas popular with Republicans. And that made for an interesting mix of political views at the polls Tuesday, when New Yorkers turned out in huge numbers to vote.
Personally, myself, I don't like Biden. I don't like the way he's going to try and run the country. He can't remember nothing. He can't remember nothing.
Putting it nicely, because I think President Trump is a bigot. I think he's arrogant. I think he is very demeaning towards women, and I don't think he's very stable.
It was an election day like no other. Socially distanced when possible and full of masks, hand sanitizer, and other cleaning supplies. That's because of the coronavirus pandemic, which has now killed more than 233,000 people in the U.S. and 33,000 in New York alone. And for some voters, that issue is hard to ignore at a polling place surrounded by signs of the virus.
Oh, so the top issues for me were how this whole coronavirus is going to be handled, because I feel like as of right now, we're not doing that great handling coronavirus.
I think Corona. Yeah, we'll decide it.
Mainly with COVID, everything that's going on with COVID, because you hear so much about it that it's a hoax and all that, so.
The issue of criminal justice reform was also on the minds of voters in New York Tuesday. When polls closed, Republicans were ahead of Democrats in several state Senate races. Democrats think absentee ballots will make up the difference when they're counted next week. But Senate Republican leader Rob Ort said Wednesday that he thought the issue of bail reform won votes for Republicans at the polls Tuesday.
This was a big issue because New Yorkers said it was a big issue. Because people across the state, poll after poll, said, I don't support this. This is too far.
For some voters, it was just the opposite. Instead of siding with members of law enforcement on the issue of criminal justice reform, some voters said this year's massive protests between police and people of color drove their choice on the ballot.
I feel like the racial tension in the United States currently is something that a lot of Americans are focusing on currently, especially since a lot of the protests because of police brutality. And I feel like that's one of the very important issues to me, too, also.
The division as far as, like, racial inequities and how people are being treated during this time. I don't agree with how everything is going on right now, because I feel like right now the divide is so much larger than what it used to be.
And then there were people that just didn't like one of the candidates, like the father of this girl in Rensselaer County. She was too young to vote, but she helped her father at his polling place on Tuesday. English isn't his first language, so she was there to help him through the process. She said she would have voted for Joe Biden if she was old enough, but that her father sided with President Donald Trump.
He voted for Trump.
Can you tell us why?
ليش اختارت ترامب؟
ترامب ما عنده يعني علاقات حرب وسلمي وإنسان.
He said Trump is not like he's not like a tough guy. He thinks he's better than Biden. So he thinks he's better.
Donald J. Trump. Because the first time we put him in there, for everything he said, he's done. And I like that in a man. He didn't lie to us.
The so-called personality vote was in play on both sides of the aisle. This voter in Albany predicted people would vote against Trump because of how blunt he can be, especially on social media.
I think that the issues that people have had with Trump and his personality and just what he represents morally will arise.
It's everything that's happening in what's going on in the office right now. It's just too much going on. A lot of chaos and ready for a change.
There are still thousands of absentee ballots to count across New York, and that won't start until next week. Until then, it's a waiting game to see just how much of those issues landed with voters across New York State. But one thing is certain. New York remains an incredibly diverse state when it comes to political views. And it's going to take more than one election for that to change.
All right, turning now to more insight on this year's elections with our political insiders. Steve Greenberg is the former press secretary for two assembly speakers and state controller Carl McCall. He now runs Greenberg Public Relations. And Bob Bellafiore was the first press secretary to Governor George Pataki. He's a founder of Stanhope Partners. Thank you both for joining me.
Great to be here.
The gang is back together. I'm so excited.
Yes, yeah, the Beatles are next.
Exactly.
Except for the dead ones.
So we're just hearing from Bill and Karen. Bill seems pretty confident that the Democrats in the state Senate are going to lose a few seats. And we know that they didn't do too well in some congressional races. Steve, I want to go to you first. What did Democrats get wrong in this election? If they got anything wrong.
Well, I still do think we need to see all the votes counted because
yes,
Bill was talking about, I mean, there's about 1.4 million. So that's going to determine the outcome of some of these races. Look, if the Senate Democrats lose all the races and they come back with 36 seats, that's a huge loss.
Yes.
But if they come back with 39, 40, 41, well, then it's sort of a wash. And I don't think it's, you know, necessarily a big deal. Clearly, the Assembly Democrats lost some seats as well. Look, this is a strange year. We had a record turnout in the middle of a pandemic, you know, and New York was its solid blue self at the top of the ticket. But it didn't go all the way through as it has in normal presidential election years.
And I think what you've seen on Long Island is some of these seats that the Democrats had won in the last few cycles were long-term, long-time Republican seats.
Yes.
So they will always be, until some magic is done through reapportionment, always be marginal seats. And I think what you've seen upstate in some of these areas is upstate is becoming more Democrat than it used to be. You've seen this in some areas of the North Country and in some of these upstate cities where the Democrats have taken some seats that have been held by Republicans for a long time.
Well, it often surprises people when you tell them, but there are actually in upstate more registered Democrats than there are registered Republicans.
Really?
Yes. See, people are often surprised by that.
But where are we defining upstate is the real question here.
But no matter where you define it, north of Dutchess County, would you, you know, from Dutchess and Sullivan north and west?
Yeah.
That's upstate. But the reason is cities of Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, the Democrats are all condensed. The Republicans cover all the land.
So, and if you look at Biden's map in New York, at least until the absentees come
yeah.
in, but the map right now looks very much like the gubernatorial race map. It's,
yes.
It's a handful of red, handful of counties that are blue. And the rest of the state is red. I mean, as of the morning after Election Day, Biden had won 12 counties.
And the irony of all this, Dan, is you asked the question, why didn't Democrats do as well? It's at a time when the Democrats' enrollment advantage keeps on growing and as big as it's ever been. 50% of the enrolled voters in this state are Democrats. Only 22% are Republican. Yet the Republicans were able to pull off, as you talked about, you know, two congressional upsets, not necessarily upsets, but defeating two incumbent Democrats.
I also wonder, even if the state Senate Democrats, even if the congressional delegation loses a few Democrats, if maybe that should be considered a win this year when there were some really strong issues that Republicans were running on, like bail reform, I think was just like at the top of the list in some of these districts, like as we were talking about before, the Max Rose seat on Lower Brooklyn, Staten Island. And even right in there, the Andrew Gunardis seat in the state Senate, things like that. So what does this look like for the state Senate next year? Bill was talking about kind of a shift to a more centrist with these upstate Democrats. What do you think, Steve?
I think, you know, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, the leader of the state Senate, you know, who has done this now for 2 years, going to go into her second term as leader. Look, in the assembly, the Democrats have had control for more than 40 years, and they have a large suburban and a large upstate membership. The Senate Democrats for years, as you guys were talking about, they had nobody upstate. It was a purely New York City conference. I think they're learning that their majority is not based on just New York City, but it's based on suburban members, upstate members, and they're going to have to figure out how to deal with that. But don't forget, when it comes to most issues, New Yorkers as a whole come out on the progressive side. Now, as you go district by district, and as Bob pointed out, these districts were drawn by the Republicans. But don't forget, this was the last year that the legislators and the members of Congress are running on the current lines.
And Dan, I think what you'll see is it's like the old all-wheel drive thing from Subaru. You send the power to the wheels that slip. And you'll see Senator Stuart Cousins need to pay attention to those marginal districts, which is holding the districts that they're likely to win upstate and trying to find a way to win back the districts that they lost on Long Island. So while the conference will be still overwhelmingly dominated by New York City interests and that sort of, you know, the left end of the party, she'll need to deliver for those marginal members that they've gained and the marginal seats that they hope to win back. And that's why you might see some issues that are more focused on Long Island or upstate than you would otherwise if it was purely a Brooklyn, Manhattan, Bronx-dominated conference.
Mm. Absolutely, and I'll throw in another wrinkle of what's going to affect what we'll see over the next 2 years. We are now past the presidential election day. We are now in the gubernatorial election cycle.
Oh, geez, don't even. It's too soon, but you're so right.
But we are in the the legislature will all be up for re-election in 2 years in new lines running on them for the first time. Mm-hmm. And the governor will likely, he has said already, that he will be running for re-election. That's going to play into the whole politics of progressive, moderate, conservative as well.
Right, because as we know, the governor likes to frame himself as a progressive. He's really more of a moderate when it comes down to it. Bob, let me ask you this about Long Island and these kind of conservative areas. Do you think it was more of the state issues like bail reform that gave those Republicans the votes? Or do you think that they were riding on the coattails of the president? Because obviously his popularity in places like Long Island has spiked in recent years.
I think those criminal justice issues are very resonant in places like Long Island. And it's funny you mentioned the president and coattails. He's a very odd politician. He has coattails but no coat. Mm. It makes him sort of an unusual character in this world, which I think we all know. I do sense that the issues that they've seen about crime and law enforcement resonate on Long Island. And keep in mind, that's where most of the cops and firemen who live in New York City, who work in New York City, live.
Right.
So people out there, no cops, no firemen, no first responders, no people who are putting their lives on the line every day. And I think they are very sensitive to that. And they also, back when people would commute to the city for work, go into the city to work. So the condition of life in the five boroughs matters a lot to people in Nassau and Suffolk.
And I'll add another wrinkle to that, which is that the Democrats over the last year and a half have not done a spectacular job communicating what they see as the advantages to this bail law.
I agree.
The Republicans have done a masterful job of communicating. So no comment on this is a good law, a bad law. I do not know the answer to that. But what I can tell you is that the Republicans have done a far better job of communicating on this issue than the Democrats.
And I think it's almost easier to communicate it from the Republican perspective, because I think that people understand this law. When somebody says this law will endanger my safety, that's very easy to understand. But when you have somebody on the Democratic side saying this law helps people of color in these communities because of X, Y, and Z, then it gets very complicated.
But you also have the president arguing about the 1994 criminal justice reform bill at the federal level, using it to attack Biden.
Oh, right.
And talking about how he ended that and let so many people out of prison.
Yeah.
The reason the Republicans have an advantage on the bail law is the old line is, if you're explaining, you're losing. And if you have to explain all these all these advantages to the bail law versus this person got this. This person committed the crime. They were released without bail, and they committed another crime.
Right.
Right. You've got real life stories compared to some theoretical view of criminal justice policy.
I don't think you need a theoretical view, but again, I think the Democrats need to do a better job of selling it and explaining why they think this is good.
We have 1 minute. I just want to talk about Congress really, really quick. Steve, you first. What happened? Because we don't have these state issues in Congress. We don't have bail reform in Congress. And Anthony Brindisi and Max Rose are really facing a challenge.
Do you really need to have an issue that is relevant to the office if you're running for that office and want to attack your opponent?
Very true.
No, I don't think so. I remember a campaign for an office that had nothing to do with an issue where the winning campaign attacked the loser on it. And the issue was abortion, and it had nothing to do with the office that was being run for. But you can run on any issue if you can run effectively and hurt your opponent.
I agree, and we have to leave it there. I'm sorry, Bob. We have to leave it there. We're out of time for this week's edition of New York Now. Please remember to visit our website at nynow.org and follow us on social media at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We'll see you there. Until then, thanks for watching this week's edition of New York Now. Have a great week and be well.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET
and by the Dominic Ferrioli Foundation.